Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. A theme park for your intellect and imagination. That's right. This is your late night talk show for your unconscious mind. Because what is an open loop exactly? Well, we'll get to that in a second. Actually, an open loop is what I just did there. I started something and then didn't finish it. I provoked your unconscious mind. That's what it is, an unconscious provocation. And this is a show that's all about exploring things that do that. We're talking magic, paranormal, conspiracies, hypnosis, fringe, anything fantastical, unexplained, extraordinary that gets to the core of who and what we really are. That's what I talk about on the show. That's what my guests talk about. You see, my name is Greg Bornstein, and I'm a looper. You might call me a cultural hypnotist. You might call me a curator of experience. You might call me an auteur of the mind. All those things are intellectually escapist, blending the brain and the heart, the soul, the spiritual, into, well, really, a big old mix of fantastical conversation. My goal is to challenge your existing belief systems by bringing on people and sharing radically unique ideas to stimulate your unconscious mind so that you're forced to step into a higher version of yourself. Well, we're going to get very fringe today. I love this episode. A lot of interesting things happened in this episode. I was looking for time travelers, and then I found a time travel researcher. There's this man, mentioned him in previous episodes before, Andy Bishago of Project Pegasus. Now, Andy has quite a compelling case. He was involved in time travel research in the middle of the 20th century. Very much has shared the story publicly on hundreds and hundreds of radio interviews and written about it and all this stuff. And Lewis Michael Reinhardt, my guest today, has become a public spokesperson for Andy. He also happens to be a time anomaly and time travel researcher himself. So I decided, well, I need to have this guy on to talk to me about all that he's dug up on this guy. Well, luckily enough, a couple things happened. First off, he put me in contact with Andy, which is amazing, and we have a full episode with him where he talks about his experiences with Project Pegasus coming up. But the other thing is, I thought this episode, and you'll hear it at the beginning, I thought this was going to be about time anomalies. I thought it was going to be about time slips and parallel worlds and all that kind of stuff. Nope, actually, it ended up pivoting entirely to an episode on what's happening on Mars. This is the perfect time to release this. That new rover went up about a week ago. We're in the end of February now. And Lewis Michael Reinhardt has been looking at photographs of the planet Mars for years. And he reveals something fascinating. Because while we get these rover images, Lewis is doing the work of actually looking deeper into the photographs. And what he found will astonish you. If you enjoy Open Loops, please make sure to hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts and rate the show. leave a review, share it with your friends. If you enjoy even a word of this, write the word, great. That'll just get these conversations out there more. And I'm just so grateful that you're listening. So thank you for tuning in. This is an interesting one. Andy Bishago, he's coming up in the future. We talk a lot about him. Just know that's who we're referring to when we mention Andy. But for this case, Louis Michael Reinhardt, well, he's going to take us to Mars. Buckle up. Louis Michael Reinhardt joins me today on Open Loops. Louis is a ufologist, a researcher of unexplained phenomena, and I'm very excited because we are going to delve today into time travel, into time anomalies, and maybe even what's actually happening on Mars. Louis, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me, Greg. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I was so excited to talk with you because, you know, I was going around and when you're doing the fringe podcast circuit, you start looking for guests. I was led to your page, which was about Project Pegasus, which I'd heard about before, and as well as just general time anomaly research. And, you know, I mean, already I feel like I could do a whole episode with you about UFOs, but I'm very curious, why don't you, for all the listeners and even for myself, sort of talk about where you were at with UFOs and how you transitioned into starting to look into time and time travel?
Sure. Thanks a lot, Greg. Appreciate you asking that question. And well, in the beginning, I was a ufologist. I was reading from my mid-20s. I'm now 68. So from my mid-20s, I began to read just volumes and volumes of the whole UFO phenomenon, the abductions and whatnot, you know, like Bud Hopkins. And well, I don't really mean the named and names because many people really know of them.
Yeah.
And what I did was, first of all, I never thought, I'm going to kind of just go to the meat of things. Okay. So I never thought that Mars, for example, was inhabited. I what I thought was that Earth just happened to be perfectly positioned in the solar system to harbor the life that it does.
Right.
And once I contacted Andy, which was just a few weeks after he wrote his paper, The Discovery of Life on Mars, he was just like he is to me now, very kind, considerate, and helpful. You know, and he wasn't like that from the very beginning. So I had trouble finding the paper. He directed me to finding the paper, actually in Alfred Lambert Weber's page, the Exopolitics.
So, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So I downloaded the paper, and I'm not going to just go into, you know, just kind of trust that he's telling me the truth right from the get-go. So I go and download his paper, and he explains where to find all of the anomalies that he found. But what I did, I took it upon myself to really not dive into that at that point, but to actually look and see what I could find. And essentially what happened, I was able to not only find or see everything that Andy had discovered, but more, you know, like I found a hovercraft. And my wife was somewhat curious about the whole thing because I was putting so much time into it. So my wife Pat decided to take a look, and she found what I've described as the Cape Guide. Matter of fact, a lot of these images that I might be talking about, you can just go to my page and look at my photos. I'm an open book with this stuff. You know? So anyway, I found the Cape Guide, who is actually the species Homo martis martis, or Mars man on Mars. So with that, they had the look of like the Nosferatu character, where they had the pointy ears and that kind of thing. And they wore afghans. So this find of the Cape guy was actually Homo martis martis, which is, they're all over the place. And so I really dove into it, and I found a few things and sent that to Andy and our good friend who recently passed away, Ross Curley. He was the chief kind of, or how was it put? It was, he ran the Mars Anomaly Research Society as the principal photo analyst.
Right.
And I recently, I guess about 4 years ago, I became the VP for Science and Education of Mars. And that is not, I'm not going to educate people on what you can find anywhere. You get a book and you can find this stuff, you know, and a lot of it is untruth, where of course they're saying that Mars is a barren, lifeless desert planet that does not harbor life. I mean, they've been talking about microbes all the time when there's actually humanoid life on Mars and some. You know, so anyway, I was hooked. And I spent, Greg, I know I spent a total of probably around 5,000 hours doing nothing but looking at Mars rover and orbiter images. So right. What I would do is simply go to the image, blow it up to around 200%, start on the left-hand side of the image, and just go up and down by screen. And when I found something that looked good, I would not look at it right away. I'd go through the whole image, in my mind, decide what I thought was worthy of looking at, went back to it again, and then changed my 200% magnification to around 350, and then I did work on the images. So all I did, I did not change anything except to introduce different hues, colors, you know, saturation, that kind of stuff, taking it from black to white into sepia and that, those kind of things. So I did a lot of that for each image, and chose what I thought were the best that would bring out the most. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
So I've continued along the path. I haven't done any photo analysis work of my own for the last probably 3 or 4 years, but I run Mars Anomaly Research Society for Andy. And so I'll comment and download their images sometimes and put my 2 cents worth in about what I actually see. Because we all have a different, I was a hearing aid specialist for 18 years, you know, and right. It's all over the board as far as what people are able to hear. For some people, normal is they can hear a pin drop. For others, they can't hear that at all, you know, so there's an audio perception, you know, where some people have fantastic hearing and some people it's just going to waste.
Right.
Well, the same thing is with perceiving what is in these images, you know, so Andy describes it as a perception quotient, which has stuck, you know, so we all have a different degree of perception And I'm fortunate enough that I'm able to see a lot of what is in these images. Some people, although it looks to me it's totally 100% clear that this is a rodent on Mars, I can see it easily, and they can't see it at all. So, and that's how it is, you know. But the Mars research has also led to some moon research, and I started Mars conferences in 2012 in a place called Hohenwald, Tennessee. And they nicknamed that for hole in the wall, you know. No. But it was about 70 miles southwest of Nashville, and I had three of the Mars meetings there, and then the next three were here in Mobile, Alabama, and at the University of South Alabama. Mm-hmm. And then the last one that I did, because of everything that's been going on, we haven't had any for the last 2 years. But the last one I did was Silver City, New Mexico. And that was phenomenal. And I've got to tell you this story. And it relates to the whole UFO thing. About a couple weeks before the conference was to be, I started seeing these ships in the sky. They were somewhat elongated, but also kind of peanut shaped like that. Mm. And I was seeing them for a couple of weeks before I left. And, you know, I'm looking at out the window on the plane and I'm not seeing anything, but I snap a few pictures.
Right.
And those same ships, were in those pictures. So,
wow.
They were following me. And I think that they were actually not only following me, but keeping me safe. So it happened every time I took pictures out of the plane. And then when I got to the conference in Silver City, New Mexico, after the first day, I woke up the next morning with I was in a kind of a half sleep still. The left side of my body, which I was lying on, felt fine, but the right side felt like kind of numb. And I get this image of this ET. That's what I found out later. Well, I presented it to Brett Colin Shepard, who is a very good friend of mine and attended a couple of the Mars conferences.
Yeah.
And I described it to him and he said, "That's the pilot." Well, he looked more kind of a dignitary than that. He might have been the pilot, but he was also probably the captain of the ship. And the best way I can describe him, he was in a deep purple robe like outfit. He had a collar that came up way up the back of his neck, and that was lined in gold. He was green skinned, a kind of a light green skin, going more towards the gray, but basically you could tell it was green.
Yeah.
And his eyes were more rounded. And I remember him turning around and looking at me. And I also remember that what I did was I asked, I'm like, come on, this is, you know, really out there.
Yeah.
So I'm like, just let me know that this is for real. Now, this is when I'm still lying in bed. Well, I got this chill, Greg. It was like up and down one side of my body. It was like everywhere. I'm like, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Then we get into the meeting. You're going to really like this. Okay. We get into the meeting. After the first couple speakers, I was the first. And after the first couple, me and another, this guy that was in the audience, he raised his hand. He said, "Listen, I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt you guys, but I just want to let you know that you are all very, very fortunate, because," he said, "there's a very large ship here with the occupants, and they were actually attending the conference. Some there, because of the people I deal with, actually saw them. Others heard them. And they would chuckle if we got something wrong."
What?
So, yes. Yes. Yeah, it is real. And I see UFOs all the time. I mean, a heck of a lot. Almost on any given night, I can go out and there'll be the main ones that I see all the time, which are Palladian. And right. Might as well get into this too. What happened? So anyway, just to finish up with the conference, that was phenomenal in and of itself, you know. And another Carla Augusta Friedrich, she was one of the hosts and helped me organize the conference, because here I am in Mobile, Alabama, and she lived there in Silver City. So we stayed at her place. A couple of us stayed at her place, but we had a little kind of a gathering party after the event on her rooftop. And I took her a couple of random pictures. And what do you think shows up? More of those ships, those same ones that I saw before I even left for the conference.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Is that one of those things, Lewis, where people hang out with you? Like, if people do hang out with you, do they ever get disappointed? They're like, hey, this guy's going to take me out and there will be UFOs. I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, you're seeing them so often. If I were to hang out with you, Lewis, and go to Alabama and look in the sky, do you think I'm going to see something?
Absolutely. No doubt in my mind whatsoever. Okay, the first one. I saw a number of them before this particular type, but I started seeing them like crazy when I was in Tennessee. And it was the same one, because they were flashing red, yellow, blue, and green, those colors specifically. And they were just kind of flashing on and off, and the ships would actually move, and I could actually ask them to move. Because like if I questioned whether one was there or not, whether it was a ship or not, then I would ask them to move. I'm like, if you can't, you can't, but if you can you move, let me know for sure. And they would. They would go up and down and crossways, and then they'd get back into the position they were in. So when Ross Curley was with me during one of the events in Tennessee, I showed him one. We were out there and I said, look, that's a ship. And he's like, no, that's just a star. I said, no, it's not. So I had binoculars. Binoculars were good enough to see that it was clearly not a star. Because if you look at the stars in general, you might get a twinkle or two, but these things are constantly doing that. They're constantly flashing these lights. So after I'm seeing these for about 6 or 8 weeks, I decide to try to make contact. So for maybe 2 months or so, each time I went to bed, I would ask to see the ships and the occupants. So this one night I was in kind of a half sleep, you know, where you're not quite asleep.
Yeah. The hypnagogic state.
Yes. Yes. Like that, you know? So I'm startled awake, fully awake. I mean, sitting up in bed awake, and I see an image of one of the ships and it's close up. And let me see if I can describe it for you. Okay. So imagine a circle in the center with nodes kind of sticking out in like a cross, but they weren't long nodes. They were, and they all touched each other around. So it basically was a X-shaped UFO, but it was a light ship. So I'm like saying to myself, wow, you know, that was pretty wild. So I lay back down, getting into that same state, and I get an image from the just below the neck up of a female occupant of the ship. And I'll do my best to describe her. It looked like she had just shaved her head about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was growing back. At first, I thought her hair was like a bleach blonde gone bad. But then after a couple of years later, I'm thinking, you know what? It wasn't that. It was actually gold. Her hair was like kind of gold. And that fits in with the Pleiadians. You know? So anyway, she had a kind of a widow's peak, and it was just a nice hairline. Her jaw was a little bit thinner than normal, but not that much where if you walk by her, you would think she's from another place. She looked just fine. And her eyes were slightly bigger, but they were without any question the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen, ever. And she had this smirk on her face. Like, okay, this is us. So I was like, I was just ecstatic over that. That I was shown that.
Where do you think she's from? Mars? I mean, what is your diagnosis of, because you mentioned the Pleiadians before, I've never quite understood the different classifications and being able to sort out where they're from, why one group is coming at this time and another isn't. Have you and your, I mean, I am sort of curious if you're at the point now where you could be like, this person looks like this and this, they are Arcturian, they're Pleiadians, da 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 da.
Well, I have to tell you that it is somewhat of a mystery. Okay. I just knew this deep down inside that's what they were. So they come from the Pleiades, star system. So they're here. What I've named them as watchers. They're just kind of watching over things, ready to intercede if necessary. And they're definitely benevolent. We're really on show here on Earth, because the reality is, yes, there's many inhabited planets throughout our galaxy and all the other galaxies. But to have the diversity of life forms that we have on Earth is unusual. And just through another avenue from a book written by Mark Kimmel, which is called Aeon, I've understood that we've been around for a very long time, and that these extraterrestrials have been visiting us for millennia. And anyway, what I was getting at is that Earth was actually the way to be. It was the icon or the pinnacle of the galaxy. It was unlike it is now. It was much higher dimension, and it was there for all to see, and to copy or to mimic the things that were going on Earth. I'm sure well aware of the diversity of life on Earth. It's just incredible. Absolutely incredible. But can I identify all the species? No, I can't. I do know, so I have a kind of a limited knowledge somewhat on that, because I really haven't looked into it.
Right.
Honestly with you. But I know, one thing I do know is that we have been visited a lot. I mean, throughout since the birth of the planet. It's crazy. It's really, it's kind of mind blowing when you think about it. So I can finish up this, the whole UFO thing is the first one that I saw. I actually saw a cluster of them when I lived in Maryland when I was growing up. I was about 14, and me and a friend of mine were outside on our porch and both saw them at the same time. And I knew without a doubt they were UFOs because I grew up in Baltimore with Reagan International, BWI, and Martin Marietta, where the Civil Air Patrol operated out of. So I knew flames. They were all over the place all the time, you know?
Right.
So it was very clear to both of us, me and George, that these were not airplanes. What happens, they went from the, that would have been the southern sky, and went so fast to the northern sky that you could hardly detect it, but you could. And they remained in that same formation. So that was my first introduction to actually seeing the UFOs. But since then, I've seen lots of them, and I've actually captured a number of them. So I have photos of them, and I actually have photos, videos of the ones that I see all the time in action. And you can go to my Facebook page and find all of this stuff.
Wow. How are you still alive, do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what I really, really believe. I believe that I have, as we all do, I have a certain purpose, you know, and I feel very strongly that I've known Andy for lifetimes. So I think that my main purpose now is to help him in any way that I can. And I'm doing that.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, and this is, get ready for this, folks. I'm about to explain something that is really, it shook my foundation. Supposedly, or, you know, it's been pretty hard to at least refute this man's case. There was a Project Pegasus. It happened middle of the 20th century. Andy is a man who claims and says very strongly that he time traveled through military technology, as well as traveled to Mars many times. And he ran for president in 2016. Like, this is the guy we're talking about. Project Pegasus is associated with him. And he's done hundreds and hundreds of interviews. And I mean, he's really kind of like, he is the, I was actually talking to someone, Lewis, when I was researching people who have claimed to time travel. I reached out to a guest on this show, this girl, Stephanie Bingham, who is an expert in paranormal phenomenon and all sorts of mostly monsters, creatures, fairies, spirits, ghosts. And I said, hey, look, you must know a time traveler. You must know some time travelers. And she goes, the only credible case is Andrew. Even, you know, she was pointing me to some Montauk stuff. A credible case is this guy, Project Pegasus.
Yeah.
That to me intrigues me. And yeah, I mean, so to take it back to how you got introduced to him amidst all this UFO stuff. Sure. I mean, were you researching? Yeah. Like, how did,
how it happened.
Yeah. Let's hear the connection.
Okay. Here's how it happened. I was already very deep into researching things in general, you know, just finding out a lot of truth that I never knew, and I'm sure most people don't know, you know, like the hazards of sodium fluoride and, you know, aspartame and all of that kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, I went to a city council meeting in Homewall, Tennessee, and I was not alone in this. But 2 weeks before the meeting, I submitted a booklet about the hazards of sodium fluoride, which they were going to be voting on whether they're going to keep it or whatever. And another guy ended up doing the same thing. And then fortunately, the Senator Joey Hensley, he was a proponent of removing fluoride from the water system. And we got that done. So they removed the fluoride from the municipal water system as a result of me and this other gentleman and the support of Joey Hensley, Senator Joey Hensley. So it's really cool. But anyway, so I was doing some research. I'd been researching all day. I was in my robe. We lived in West Virginia at the time. And I was had enough, but I decided to, I play guitar and sing. So I Googled child prodigy musicians. And you know how they always prompt you on the right-hand side when you're on YouTube. So right. I don't know why I got mixed in with this, but anyway, it was Andrew DiBisciotto, The Discovery of Life on Mars. I'm like, what?
You
know?
Yeah.
Because I didn't think there was life on Mars. You know, I didn't know. So anyway, that's when I contacted him, and I told you it was the 9th, but I think it was actually the 8th, January the 8th, and he published his paper on 12/12/08. So I contacted him on 1/8/09, and that was how I ended up hooking up with him initially. Now, we didn't have a lot of conversation at the first few months, because what I was doing, I was submitting all this work, and I was submitting it to him and to the late Ross Curley. And what happened was I found this, what I call the Festival on Mars. It was actually I'll think of it in a second, but it was in a crater, Victoria Crater. And there was a festival going on, this lady playing piano, a guy in front of her singing, a clown, a head of a Viking, the bar was actually fashioned out of what you would think was an old Viking ship. It had the head that came off of it, like a reptile, that kind of thing. And so anyway, I found that, and then I found another shot of the exact same area. And to make sure it was, I compared the rocks, the way they were positioned and at the right angle and all that kind of stuff. Well, anyway, I found this image where none of that was there. So it was obvious to me that there was this festival going on Mars, and they had taken it all down. You know where it was before? I can't remember which one. So I actually discovered that, and then literally I found movement where there was something, one thing was in one location and then moved to another location. So, yes. So after I found that, that's when Andy asked me to be a photo analyst for Mars Anomaly Research Society. And a lot of people don't understand, we do have many, many contributors to Mars. Many, as a matter of fact, there's some that are, I hate to even mention one, but the one that sticks out to me is Martine Graney. She has done some extraordinary work, but there are many others too, like Terry Burnett, Neville Thompson. So there's a lot of people that have done fantastic work on Mars imaging and finding what is there.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, look, Mars is hot topic these days in terms of like where NASA is going. And we heard a lot of stories a couple years ago about the people that were training to leave their families to go to Mars for the first time, all that stuff. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. Okay, so there's this narrative of the Mars story, but then you're doing like research into these other things. I mean, how far this, yeah, when you say there's a lot of people involved in this, I mean, are we talking people who were former NASA astronauts, are there people in the government, are there people whose names you can't even mention because they're doing this kind of work undercover and they're not supposed to disclose it? What exactly, I wonder, I guess I'm confused how, I wonder how fringe this project actually is.
It's not really fringe, but I don't know of anyone who is like, you know, a NASA employee or whatever that has done this. Matter of fact, they're in just total denial about the whole thing. But without question, we've proven the case. It's already been proven. It was proven by Andy in 2008. But since then, there's been much, much more that has come out. But to my knowledge, there's no government people per se that are involved. Now there may be, you know, but I don't know about that. And there are hundreds and hundreds of people doing this kind of work, just analyzing photos. And like I told you, I spent, it's a rough estimate, but around 5,000 hours doing that, looking at images. So I'm totally 100% convinced. And therefore, I am totally convinced that Andrew DiPasciago is telling the absolute truth. And in all things that he is telling and putting out there to the public, he is telling the truth to the very best of his ability and recollection.
That is so fascinating.
And originally what happened was he thought he had only been to Mars a couple of times. Now there are two different programs. Project Pegasus and Project Mars are two different programs. He left Project Pegasus when he was 11 and didn't get back into anything like that until Project Mars when he was, I think I had this right, I think he was 18 going into 19, but 19 is kind of essentially when it started. So that program was from 1981 to 1984. And there were many participants, including Barry Socorro.
Barry. We're going to talk about Barry Socorro.
Yes. AKA Barack Obama, you know. So him and a number of other people, a couple off the top of my head was Regina Dugan, who coincidentally Obama named her the first female head of DARPA. And of course, Project Mars, everything is linked. Everything is kind of linked. And who else? Brett Collins Shepard. I misspoke there. William Stillings. William Stillings heard Andy speak on a coast-to-coast interview, and I think that was 2011. Don't quote me on that, but I believe it was. And after the show, Brett called Andy and said, "Hey, you remember we were on Mars together, blah, blah, blah." Of course, they had many, many, many hours of conversation. And what happened was Brett was key to Andy remembering his additional visits to Mars, which were actually over 40 visits. He doesn't know exactly, but over 40 visits. Yep.
Now, wait a minute. So, okay, this is such an unbelievable story to the point, and I want to believe it. Let's go with the Obama. Let's go down the Obama line of thinking for a second, because I feel like that is such a, and I remember there, I mean, I was looking up, I talked to Andy on the phone. I met him, or I had a phone call with him a couple weeks ago before this interview. And he was telling me the Barry Sotero stuff. And then I looked up an article, and, you know, Vice, of course, did their hit job piece about, you know, time traveler tries to get Barack Obama to admit that he was on Mars, da 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 da. And he completely denied it.
Right.
And I'm going, okay, so this is all that is out there in the media about this. Tell me this. Did they wipe all the files on Barack Obama's time? Is there any evidence at all that Barack Obama or this Barry character was part of this program?
I am not aware of any. I don't know. You know, but what I do know is that Andy is telling the truth. And the thing is, which you have to look at, like a lot of people, they want to give an opinion when they've never even listened to a single one of his interviews, or they've maybe only listened to a handful. Well, I've listened to well over a couple hundred, you know, and I can tell you that his story does not change.
Yeah.
The only thing that where there's an alteration is if he finds out new information, then he brings that forward. But other than that, his story remains the same.
So, yeah. That's what's interesting about this guy. That's what's very interesting.
Yeah, it really is. And he remembers with such detail that is really phenomenal. I wish I had the memory that he has. You know, so anyway, one of the things I know that happened is Andy and Regina Dugan and Obama, we'll call him Obama now, they were tasked with evaluating a French dossier. And they were supposed to come out of that with how they felt whether Mars was a threat or not. And Dugan thought that it was. And the reason she thought that Mars was a threat is because in 1964, our astronauts landed on Mars via conventional rocketry. So that's interesting even in and of itself, because supposedly we went to the moon for the first time in 69, right?
Yeah. But
do you think we would go to the moon before we went to Mars? What would you think? Would you think we would go to the moon before we would go to Mars?
I mean, I'm conditioned to believe that we would, just because of the history of it. Makes sense to me.
Well, yeah, it makes sense that you would try to get to the moon before you try to get to Mars. And here we were on Mars in 1964. And we went to the moon in 69, supposedly for the first time. I don't believe that for a second. We were on the moon well before that.
Is there anything so they're saying 64. Yeah, is there anything in writing, paper, anything that has documentation?
No. Not that I have found. Not to my knowledge.
That's what's so weird about this. Are they burying it? Are they hiding it?
I don't, you know, to a certain degree, I really don't know, because I don't know if they think that the world population is stupid or what, you know, that they can't handle the truth. Well, I believe that they can.
Yeah.
I mean, when I found out that Mars was inhabited, did I go crazy? No. You know?
Yeah.
My eyes got open, you know. So yeah, they did that evaluation. And what Andy does not know is he does not know what Obama thought, because he wouldn't say. He knows that Andy didn't think that Mars was a threat, but Regina Dugan did. She thought it was a threat. So I don't know. Now, what happened was when these, I gotta contextualize that. When after the astronauts crash landed on Mars, the humanoids that we were in contact with agreed to rescue them. This was in that French dossier. And then later reneged, and our brave astronauts died from exposure on planet Mars. Because Mars is really, it is a desert planet.
Yeah.
And the areas that Andy went to were more in the equatorial region. And it was like he described it as being like kind of the desert in Arizona, like that, you know, red clay, red dirt, that kind of thing. But but he still saw, first of all, that skies were baby blue in color and not red like they show. And also that it was inhabited. There are predators. There's dinosaurs on Mars. You know, he saw a couple of his comrades virtually bitten in half.
Whoa. Wow. Yikes. Yeah. There are dinosaurs on this planet?
Yes. Yes. And what they are, Andy describes them as having the body of a velociraptor and the head of a T-Rex. So the head was bigger proportionally than the body, you know. So, and what would happen is, it's not like you see on TV where the dinosaur just goes through the whole camp and kills everybody. It doesn't work like that. They're killing to eat. That's it. So they're not going to kill this one kid that Andy Soul killed, right, bit in half, and then go on to the next one and kill them too. It doesn't work like that.
Oh, and interesting. So they're eating,
yeah. So and then there's other creatures on Mars too. Actually, lots of them. I found a horse.
You found a horse. What does that mean in your photos?
I found a horse on Mars. I'm not the only one either.
Yeah, this is really, here's what I'm wondering. Why do the photos come out the way they do? Why is there not, you know, you take a picture of New York City, you're going to see hundreds of people on the streets. Is it feels to me, and this is where, you know, I, for a skeptical person, they might look at this and be like, these people are pattern recognition machines. They're looking at desert. They're looking, I mean, this is the criticism. I've read some of the criticism of the articles, right? They say like, it's a shit. It's a rock. It's not a person. It's a rock. Two questions. One, why is it not just a rock? And two, if it's not, then why don't we see a family reunion photo of a group of humanoids? Why is that photo not available?
Well, the truth is, it is. I've seen a number of photos with the Martians gathered around a table.
What?
And I found, yes, yes. And
no
I,
way.
I found,
what? How? Yes. Where is that? You must be hiding that one on your Facebook.
It's there. I see them all the time. They're, I haven't put all of my work out. I've got a lot of work, and I've only put in a small sampling of it. You know,
there are Martians around the table.
Yeah, there. It's, and most of the so-called tables are just ruins that were there, or a rock that happened to be flat, or like that, you know. So, but I've seen gatherings. I've actually seen, now this is really out there.
No, give
and
it
I
to
have
me.
Not put this out there. It was like an amphitheater. The outside, there's a chorus, and there's one guy that's standing up. These look like humans, but I don't know, but one guy is standing up and he's got his songbook in front of him. And the people that are attending this thing, what I call them is big heads. Okay, they're mostly head.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is, the way I see it. And then there's this girl that's coming down this ramp, and she is just clapping and like in this festive mood, like she's dancing down the ramp. And she has a skirt on, kind of a short skirt. And yeah, that's that whole scene. I have that whole scene.
You have a photo of this. It's a photograph.
Yes.
Yes. Now, we haven't even talked about time travel yet. So like you first of all, this interview isn't over. You're sticking around. But second of all, this is the most astonishing thing I've ever heard. Why do you have this photo? Did you take it? Who took it?
Well, now you have to understand with the work I did. I went to the Mars images and just zoomed in. And that's what I got. That's how I found it. So it is a photograph of one of my finds. So the way that I work is I would find this find and zoom in on it the best I could without distorting it, and then take it and put it in paint. But paint is where, because I already done the work on it as far as hues and that kind of thing. Paint, the only thing I did in there was to identify things. So I had a bunch of different images of the same area, and then I would have what is called an identifier. So I would point out all of the things that I see in this identifier. And that's how I worked. A lot of people aren't doing it that way, but that's the way I did it and was the most comfortable for me. So, and another image that I have, this is actually, I'm pretty sure it's on my, in Facebook, just go to my photos. It is a duck-billed lady. And I think what she's doing is she's serving up a meal. And she, again, her face is, she has a duck bill on her, as her face. Yeah. She has this frilly kind of dress on. It goes about mid-thigh. And the sleeves are puffy and kind of short. And she looks like she has, swear this is what it looks like. It looks like she has a plate in her hand serving it. And all around her are different types of beings, hybrids and that kind of thing. There's lots of hybrids on Mars, like the scorpion being. The scorpion beings, Andy found a couple of them in his paper. And then just luck, pure luck, I found two more. And Andy did a paper, a PDF on that. And also what I found, there's a goddess, her name is Circuit. And the goddess Circuit was depicted with a headdress that had a scorpion. It was a scorpion headdress. But there were artifacts found of her on little slabs of kind of marble. And she is a scorpion being. From the waist down, she's a scorpion. From the waist up, she's humanoid. And that's what was found on Mars. So there are lots of hybrids like that on Mars, lots of them.
What? Why isn't why isn't this public knowledge? Like, where, you know, like,
I know.
Like have you tried to go to people? Have you been like, hey, look at this, this, and this. We should be talking about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and also, you know, friends and family, I've shown myself. Some of them see it right away, others can't. So it just depends. Like I have what I have named the Wizard of Mars. That's also on my Facebook. And the Wizard of Mars is a what they do is they mark their habitat by geoengineering the landscape, you know, and making it identifiable. Now, what is really interesting, it makes it identifiable from the air. Now, others, there's smaller dwellings or entrances into dwellings where they have put a likeness of themselves, carved a likeness of themselves on the outside to let everyone else know that it's occupied and who lives there. Just like we would put on our house, we would put numbers.
Yeah.
648 Elm Street, right? Well, they don't do that. They put identifiers as far as that kind of thing goes. And then they have done these things where someone traveling, so they keep on their path. You look in front of you and you'll see a bird. But this bird is actually a collection of different things along the path that when you're going the right way, you see a bird. When you're right on top of it, you just see a piece of the bird that doesn't look like anything. You know, so, but this Wizard of Mars actually has a lot more in it. It is a habitat, and there's a lizard face and a gorilla face that's also there.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
Greg! It is really phenomenal, and many people have found a lot of structure. I found structure that is still being used. Some of it totally dilapidated, you know. But it's obvious that what it is.
Have people from all over the world, have people like internationally looked at these photos at all and or submitted to this? This is an international thing. Wow.
Yes. Yes. You know, so absolutely. I'm in contact with people all over the planet that are doing this.
I do kind of feel like the French love this stuff for some reason, or at least, you know, in the documentary Unknowable, Stephen Greer talks about Sarkozy, and Sarkozy had documents that he wasn't going to talk about when he was in power. But then once he was out, there's a document where he's, yeah, we've been communicating with UFOs forever or ETs. I feel like the French, also like Jacques Vallée, these guys love UFOs and they love alien talk. Is there something interesting? What do you think? I mean, who of the countries that are interested in exploring Mars, is there anyone that sticks out to you as being particularly interested slash having evidence for it?
You mean as far as an individual?
Oh, I just mean,
well,
like,
just in general.
I guess in general.
I think it's virtually all over the planet. I know of someone in India. I know someone in Denmark, the UK.
Are they doing what you're doing? They're looking at the photos from the rover and just analyzing it? That's sort of the...
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. So we have... Yeah. And then, you know, this rover, I don't know if you're aware of this, but this rover actually has a helicopter on it. Something, well, a drone, I guess you can call it. So when it lands, it's going to be able to put this drone up in the air and look from a bird's eye view, I think.
Right.
And another thing that's really, you might find really interesting, okay, is that we use a parachute to slow down the rover, right?
Right.
Well, if the millibars were at 8% or 8, it would take a parachute the size of the continental US to slow down the rover. But the fact is, it's not that. It's around 800 millibars. Okay, so that a parachute will in fact slow down the rover when it should not. So I mean, when Andy was on the planet's surface, he breathed the air. He didn't have to have a breathing device.
Oh.
There's sufficient oxygen on Mars to sustain human life.
When are so what do you think then is actually going on with this talk of people going to explore Mars and potentially never coming back? Well, how do you make that the mainstream narrative on Mars exploration in light of your research?
Well, there's been a lot of that kind of thing, banner back and forth amongst researchers, and one of the things that Andy discovered in his paper, Discovery of Life on Mars, just to the left of the Lady on the Edge, which is a famous photograph, and there are bodies, they're dressed in blue uniforms, they're dead, they're laying all over the place, you know, but because they're not going to bury their dead, they live underground. So the elements take care of the dead. They're above ground. We've seen a number of what appears to be burial sites, you know, where they're above ground. So it's, I mean, it gets stranger and stranger as you
wait a minute. I'm trying to read. What are you saying here? Are you saying that I'm sort of reading the implication here? The implication being blue suits, NASA, dead U.S. Yeah. people. Like, are you telling me they're people? You believe that those bodies might be astronauts that have already gone that just didn't make it back?
No, not astronauts. They were workers.
Oh,
make it. You know, they're workers that didn't make it. So because of, I mean, it's hard labor, really, you know, and then you don't want to go outside because you have these predators. Andy describes one kind of looking like a grasshopper but is about the size of a small dump truck.
Wow. Now, wait a minute. Oh, sorry. I was going to ask about Andy for a second and the way he got there. And if the story is different, like the other thing we hear in the mainstream narrative is, you know, we're going to take a rocket. That's what Tesla's doing. That's what Elon is trying to, well, we're going to make a rocket. We're going to go to Mars. Andy's talked about taking it, walking into a building and going in an elevator and opening the door and then being on Mars. What is the technology there? How is Project Mars working back in the day?
Well, it's the Mars jumper. You know, basically they wormhole. You know, essentially the way he describes it is they get into this elevator like box and it begins to morph. It took anywhere from 8 to 20 minutes to get to Mars. But anyway, the elevator or box begins to morph into like a tunnel. So they're kind of wormholing. And he said that you even had to kind of felt like you needed to hold on to the side to right yourself. And then anyway, when that's over, and the door opens on the other side on Mars, you're there. So it's a jump run. So you can go anywhere. Literally, you can go anywhere. And I mean that in its entirety. You can go anywhere in the galaxy if they have a jump run.
I was going to say, you know this raises the question of how we even got to Mars in the first place. So I get that Andy got there and the other people, but who's the first person to figure out you get a wormhole set up? Like, do you know about this?
No, I don't know. Nope, I don't know how it came into being. I don't recall him ever saying how it came into being, but
I'll have to make sure to ask him.
And then the 8 to 20 minute thing, that was like, if it was in apogee, then it would be far away. I think I had that right. Yeah. And it would be far away. So it'd be 20 minutes. The Mars would be far away. So, and when it was in perigee, then it would be close and it took 8 minutes. I mean, they're talking about 6 months to get to Mars. Well, yeah, and a rocket. But that is like, it'd be like, instead of taking your car, you have a horse and buggy. You're going to go 20 miles with the horse and buggy. Instead of your automobile, you would be there in no time. Yeah, so this technology, I'm sure, is still in place. And they did have a program, maybe still do have the program of 20 years and back. And you can read about the Michael Relf story. You can go and just plug his name in on the internet, and you can find his story.
How do you spell his last name?
R-E-I-L-F, I think it is.
R-E-I-L-F, Michael Relf. Story about Mars.
I think that's it. Yes. And it's about Mars, and you can get the whole thing of how, because here's what happened to him. It's wild. And this is what they do. So he went to Mars when he was, let's say, 22, and he spent 20 years on Mars. So now he's 42. They sent him back to not only where he left from, but the time he left from, and then age regressed him to be the age he was when he left. So he ends up living another 20 years besides that.
What?
So biologically, he is 20 years older than he actually is.
Oh my God. Now, when you age regret, when you, in hypnosis land, when we talk about age regression, we're talking about a process where you close your eyes and make the person relive an experience when they were younger or go into their mind. What what they did. They adjusted his mind 20 years back, even though
I'm not a technical guy, so I don't know exactly how they did that. I just know that they did it. So they have.
Does Andy believe this guy?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, I know. And he's very discerning. He's very discerning of the people who talk about Mars and talk about time travel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And there's a few people that he's called out that I knew. We talk all the time, Andy and I, that there was a few people that he called out, like Corey Good.
Yeah.
And Captain K. Or
Randy Kramer was the one he was telling me about.
Randy Kramer, yes. And their whole case is a lie. Their whole story is a lie. You know, so Andy can get into more of that with you, you know, if you have that kind of time. But so now what I'm doing is, you know, Andy has had vision problems. So I've been acting, I guess you want to call it his spokesperson.
Yeah.
So I am answering questions the best I can to the people on the groups that he had, which I've kind of taken over the time.
Do you think that Lewis, we're going to definitely have to talk about what the heck Pegasus is. But I was going to ask you, is the proof in this case to you beyond the things you're actually seeing and having a wider and more, I don't know, expanded perception quotient, as Andy coined it, beyond those things, mm-hmm. is your proof that Andy is more legitimate, the fact that the story is consistent versus Corey Good and Randy Kramer? I guess I'm wondering why Andy's story over these other people who also, it seems like, look, I listen to Coast to Coast. I listen to conspiracy podcasts. I've heard these guys come on and I'm sitting there going, sure. I have no idea. I mean, I really don't, without doing enough research into it and meeting them. And I would not know. I remember Randy Kramer in particular, when I heard him talk about it, I was like, if this were real, he's doing a pretty decent job acting. And then Andy's defense was, well, look, he messed up the name of someone in an interview. Right. So therefore, the story is inconsistent. Corey Good is talking about meeting an official in the Khyber Pass or something. And that knocks out his story. Or the Khyber Belt. Yes. Khyber Belt. Yes. So I'm going, why in the world, Lewis, are you buying into this one guy's story that sounds just as improbable as these other people? Why is that?
That's a very, very good question, Greg. Well, some of it is due to kind of just innately knowing. You know, so I'll put this. Even though it went against my research into as a ufologist, I don't know what it was. To be honest with you, I really can't pinpoint it, except that I just knew. And I knew early on that he and I we've spent lifetimes together, you know, so I'm extremely comfortable with him. And again, I've listened to minimum 200 interviews, probably 300, you know. Yeah. So, and he's been to two of the Mars conferences, you know, and his presentations at the Mars conference. And he did one remotely. He did the, because of health issues, he couldn't go to Silver City, New Mexico. So we piped him in, you know, and did a remote presentation. But that was pretty good. And so I guess all the conversation I've had with him, I just know it. He's too consistent.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the Betty and Barney Hill that's the criticism there, right? Or not the criticism, it's the I remember my grandfather who passed away, grandfather Herbert Stearns. He was talking to me about Benny and Barney Hill And the I don't know how true this is, but at least the story on them was the military doctor that was really looking into their case and talking about it was like, I don't know if what they claim happened to them happened, but I definitely do know that they 100% believe it did.
Right.
And that to me might be enough in this case. I don't know. I mean, look, I'm always looking for the rational thing, right? I'm like, okay, well, maybe Andy is better than Sacha Baron Cohen at acting. Maybe he's got the story so down, or maybe he's got the psychosis in it so strong that it's still consistent, but he still believe. But it does not seem to. He knows people. I mean, I don't know. Have you ever met or talked to any of the contacts he's talked about knowing friends with a famous astronaut's wife? He knows her really well. I don't know how public that knowledge is, so I won't name names. But there was a guy in government that pretty high up, an actual senator. He's mentioned senators that are like, yeah, these are friends of mine, people who have said Project Pegasus happened. To me,
right,
that makes me believe him more because he's putting those people's names on the line. But I'm also curious, yes, have you talked to anybody in the government, or, you know, what are some of the things beyond the interviews that lead you to really buy into that this is legit?
Okay. I have spoken to William Brett Stillings in Lent, who is the one that helped Andy, you know, regain his memories of his Mars visitation. And I spoke to him a lot, basically about the same thing. He was doing the same thing, you know. And then I also spoke to probably a half a dozen times or so, the late William White Crow, born William Paris. But I spoke with him a lot, and he was did one of the conferences here in Mobile, but he didn't attend it. He had to do it remotely also. So he was on Mars, and he was someone that actually trained Andy in survival skills, you know, because he knew he was going to be going to Mars. And then I spoke with civilian astronaut Ken Johnston. And Ken Johnston, who actually was at one of the Mars conferences also, he is the, he took care of making sure everything was going to be safe for the Apollo missions and whatnot. So he took care of the capsules. He knew all the astronauts. He made sure that they could get in and out easily enough and that kind of thing.
Wow.
And
wow.
He was also on Mars. He was on Mars was responsible for rescuing people in kind of a helicopter, but it wasn't exactly like it was like a helicopter rover type thing. So he rescued Andy at least once. So I've talked to three other individuals that have been there. Now, anyone actually in the government per se? No, but I don't really need to.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like they'd be of much help anyways.
Probably not, because they're going to be in total denial, you know?
So, yeah.
Anyway, hey, Greg, I really hate to do this, but I'm going to have to vamoose.
Oh, no. So, we didn't even get into time travel. Well, look, this has been the focus of your book. You know what? This is going to be part one, I hope.
Okay, let me just give you throw one plug in there. I am writing this book. It's about a single case. Now, there's going to be other stuff along with it, but essentially about a single case of a woman that I've been talking to for January the 7th or 12th, I think it'll be, will be 4 years that we've been talking. And she was moved from all other timelines except for this one as a punishment. But we can get into that later.
Oh my gosh.
And I know she's telling the truth. You know, she's telling it the way it is. So we have that capability. We have the now the capability to be timeline specific. When Andy was in the Project Pegasus, the using Chronovision, they sent him back to try to see who actually shot President Lincoln. But each time that he went back, there was a little bit of something that was off. So they at that point, they weren't timeline specific. One of the things that was off is he'd go back one time and he'd see this guy walking in with a woman on each arm. Then the next time he'd go there, he'd see the guy walking in with one woman. Next time, it'd be just him, just the guy walking in. And then at the ticket booth, he would see father and son doing the whole ticket deal. Then he would see just the son. Then he'd come back another time, he'd see just the father. You know, so what they did at that point in time, they determined that Chronovision wasn't a reliable time travel mechanism that they could use for, you know, really good information, intel. You know, so, but at this point, it's my guess, and a total guess, I would think that they have perfected that. So whoever moved Miss K, they, I'm not going to really reveal her name. She doesn't want to reveal, but whoever moved her had access to that. And the person that moved her, everyone would know. Literally, everyone would know. Okay. Almost everyone.
That is what I don't even. Okay, you blew my brain open. I mean, Lewis, Michael, I'm very disappointed because, well, look, I just want you. I don't know if this is your way. This is the biggest open loop ever. This is an open loop without closing it, which in a way is the spirit of this show. Yeah, man. This is part one.
Okay.
We covered Mars today. So this is the Mars episode, but we're going to do like a full deep dive into time travel and this parallel life and also your experience of a timeline shift. I know you have a story as well. So
I have 5 or 6 of them.
Oh my God. We're going to have you back on. Michael Lewis Reinhardt, thank you so much for sharing all about Mars and UFOs today on Open Loose, as well as Andy's story. This has been amazing. And please definitely come back soon. We need to hear we need to hear what happened with this woman.
Greg, thank you very much. And you let me know when.
Awesome.
Oh, let me be clear. This is Barack Obama. I was just listening. Let me be clear. Definitely on Mars.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And thank you, Lewis Michael Reinhardt, for part one of our interview. Can't wait to have you back. Can't wait to share Andy Bishago's time travel interview. Mars Anomaly Research Project. Check them out on Facebook. Look at these pictures. They are wild. I'm Greg Bornstein. Thank you so much for listening. Talk soon.